Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Paul and Jordana.
Go ahead.
Please, after you. Ladies before gentlemen.
I'm no gentleman.
It was not the news many in Louisville wanted to hear following months of outrage and activism and anticipation. A grand jury in Louisville has decided to indict one of the three Louisville Metro police officers involved in the fatal shooting of Breonna Taylor. But don't be fooled, my friends. This isn't about her shooting. The indictment is for basically discharging a weapon that went into somebody else's apartment. Three counts of wanton endangerment. Bond was set at $15,000, and the max sentence is 5 years in prison. The jury did not announce any charges against Jonathan Mattingly and Miles Cosgrove, the two other officers involved. None of the three face charges directly over Breonna's death. Come 6 months after Taylor, a 26-year-old EMT, was shot and killed in her home by police. And for many, this is not a just decision. It is the way the laws are written, and we understand that. But it might be time to change the way we define justice in this country. I am saddened for her family. I am saddened for Black people who feel that they are getting shot by police and there is no justice. I agree with them. There is no accountability. It might be time to change the way we police in this country, where people can bust into somebody's house, shoot a woman dead, and then nothing. My heart is with the protesters and anyone, well, everyone affected by Breonna Taylor's death.
Yeah, it's hard to wrap my brain around this as well, Jor. And again, this was a grand jury, supposedly a jury of Breonna's peers who reached this decision. And a lot of people upset by the decision. Some will argue, well, it was due process. You know, it went before a grand jury and this was the verdict. So, you know, but still, it seems deeply unsatisfying. Was justice done? My personal take, no. So
I think you echo the sentiment of many people who have been following this case.
George. The other story we're covering right now is Anthony Fauci, who apparently is madder than hell and not going to take it anymore when politicians second guess the science, second guess his credentials. There's a lot of talk about herd immunity, and a certain subset of the population thinks, well, let's just let the virus take its course. When we reach herd immunity, which, by the way, is 60 to 80% of the population, either being vaccinated or developing antibodies by catching this thing, then we'll be okay. Problem with herd immunity before a vaccine is that it could mean the premature death of 1 to 2 million Americans to get to that 60 to 80% of the population. So there was some back and forth today at a Senate subcommittee hearing between Senator Rand Paul from Kentucky, who's a doctor, but he's an ophthalmologist. He is not an expert on viruses, and Anthony Fauci. Here's how that exchange went.
New York had the highest death rate in the world. How could we possibly be jumping up and down and saying, oh, Governor Cuomo did a great job? He had the worst death rate in the world.
No, you misconstrued that, Senator, and you've done that repetitively in the past. They got hit very badly. They've made some mistakes. Right now, if you look at what's going on right now, the things that are going on in New York to get their test positivity 1% or less is because they are looking at the guidelines that we have put together from the task force of the four or five things of masks, social distancing, outdoors more than indoors, avoiding crowds, and washing hands.
Or they've developed enough community immunity that they're no longer having the pandemic because they have enough immunity in New York City to actually stop.
I challenge that, Senator.
I'm afraid, please, sir,
I would like to be able to do this because this happens with Senator Rand all the time. You were not listening to what the director of the CDC said, that in New York it's about 22%. If you believe 22% is herd immunity, I believe you're alone in that.
Go, doctor. Go, Dr. Fauci.
Well,
go, Fauci.
Look, when you're flying in an airplane, do you second-guess the pilot?
No.
I don't either. If that's their field of expertise, so, you know, Rand Paul is an ophthalmologist, and good for him. But when it comes to viruses, I trust the epidemiologist before I trust an ophthalmologist or any politician to give me information.
If it's the science. Paul, he knew. You can Google it and find out that herd immunity means what, like 60 to 80%? I mean, 60 on the low end to 80% of the population. That's what he's talking about. He called it community immunity. That's what herd immunity is. And for Rand Paul to misstate that, he is trying to get it into the psyche, into the subconscious of the American people that New York has herd immunity. Well, no, 20% got infected. A lot of people died. But it's not herd immunity. So what he is spewing is lies. And people shouldn't believe that New York has herd immunity. And he knows better because he's a doctor. And this is the dangerous place of fake news and lies that we are in this country. That's why. And some people don't know that herd immunity is 60 to 80% and it's just 20%. And they would believe Rand Paul. And that would be sad.
The CDC says more than 90% of Americans remain susceptible to coronavirus. So you want to, you know, roll the dice, see how well you do? Okay. Most Americans don't. Be nice to have a vaccine, but until then, caution is the best way you can avoid this thing. So.
Amen. Thank you. Yes, thank you very much. When we get back, we will speak with Professor Rachel Palouse at the University of St. Thomas School of Law. She's also a former United States attorney for Minnesota. We are going to talk with her about the lack of charges in the Breonna Taylor case.
According to Kentucky law, the use of force by Mattingly and Cosgrove was justified to protect themselves. This justification bars us from pursuing criminal charges in Miss Breonna Taylor's death. The truth is now before us. The facts have been examined, and a grand jury comprised of our peers and fellow citizens has made a decision. Justice is not often easy. It does not fit the mold of public opinion, and it does not conform to shifting standards. It answers only to the facts and to the law. With this in mind, we must now ask ourselves, where do we go from here?
That was Kentucky Attorney General Daniel Cameron today when he announced no charges in the killing of Breonna Taylor. But justice can conform to shifting standards. Otherwise, Ruth Bader Ginsburg would not have had such a beautiful and life-altering career. Justice does change based on what's culturally accepted. We don't stone people anymore. We don't have slaves anymore. We have an elastic clause in the Constitution. Justice does bend to the will of the people. Joining us now to talk more about this decision is Rachel Palouse. She is a professor at the University of St. Thomas Law School. She was also U.S. attorney in the U.S. Attorney's Office for the District of Minnesota, recorded the highest number of prosecutions in history. She was unanimously confirmed by the United States Senate to serve as the U.S. District Attorney for Minnesota. She is joining us now on the CenterPoint Energy Home Service Plus hotline. Professor Paul Luce, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Ms. Green. It's nice to be with you this evening.
What was your reaction to hearing that there were no charges in Breonna Taylor's death?
Well, I think this is consistent with what we've seen across the country in police brutality cases. It is very hard for prosecutors to obtain indictments. And I do think that there was some sort of signal last night when Kentucky officials announced that they would be enforcing curfews and were urging calm, that the news would not be what Breonna Taylor's family had hoped for these past 6 months.
Professor Pelos, this is Paul. Thank you for joining us for some perspective.
You.
I think most people agree that police officers have one of the toughest jobs there is. Yes, they are there to serve and protect. They also want to protect their own lives and livelihoods and stay safe. Can you talk about what may have been some of the mitigating circumstances in this case? On the face of it, it looks pretty cut and dry. What are we not seeing here that perhaps the grand jury did see and swayed them towards perhaps a lighter sentence?
Or lighter charges. So first of all, we only saw charges against one of the three officers, Brett Hankison, who's already been fired from his position in the police department. And interestingly, the police chief, when he dismissed him, said that Hankison's conduct was, quote, a shock to the conscience, which is a legal term, and indicated the city clearly felt it had liability for at least Hankison's conduct. What the Kentucky Attorney General made very clear during his press conference today was that the issue here was the use of deadly force. And as you say, Mr. Douglas, we all agree that police officers have very difficult jobs. They need to make decisions in split seconds, often. Their lives are in danger. This was a more difficult situation because it involved a no-knock warrant executed at about 1 in the morning. And so everyone involved in the situation, the civilians, were certainly taken by surprise. And what the Attorney General from Kentucky said in describing the grand jury's decision here was that he agreed, and the grand jury agreed with him, that at least two of the three officers appropriately used deadly force. When we look at Kentucky law on the use of deadly force by police officers executing warrants, it is clear that they have the ability to use force that's appropriate to the situation. And so there will be a lot of questions, ongoing questions, about how this situation came to be, but it's pretty clear that at this moment, the grand jury agreed with the Kentucky Attorney General and his team that two of the three officers appropriately used deadly force when they were fired upon by one of the apartment occupants, Ms. Taylor's fiancé, Mr. Walker.
Is this an outdated law, or do you think that it still serves the people of Kentucky?
Well, there is some confusion here because, on the one hand, we have a Kentucky statute that allows law enforcement to use deadly physical force. On the other hand, Kentucky also has statutes on the book, like many other states, that allow the use of deadly force, or what we call stand your ground laws or castle laws, that allow homeowners to use deadly force against intruders. And because most of the people, the civilians involved in this, say the police did not knock and announce their presence, and because Mr. Walker, who fired upon one of the officers, says he believed that his home was being invaded by criminals, there is understandable confusion. And I think many people would agree that if you heard riotous action outside your front door at 1 in the morning, you would also be scared and confused. And so there are going to be questions about whether these no-knock warrants are appropriate, whether they're consistent with other laws, including castle laws. And we know already that Senator Rand Paul from Kentucky, whose home state was obviously most impacted by the death of Ms. Taylor, has introduced legislation to ban no-knock warrants.
Can Professor, can you update listeners? What is Minnesota's law regarding no-knock warrants?
I am not an expert on Minnesota law, but I can tell you on in the federal scheme, which is where a lot of these cases arise because, frankly, the rise of the no-knock warrants came to be with the war on drugs and the perception mm-hmm. that knocking and announcing could, A, risk officer safety, or, B, result in the destruction of evidence. We thought that we had gotten an answer from the United States Supreme Court. And in 1995, the United States Supreme Court unanimously ruled in a decision written by Justice Thomas that the Fourth Amendment to the United States Constitution contained an implicit knock-and-announce rule. So absent certain exceptions, the police were generally required to knock and announce their presence. That's why I say there is a great deal of confusion about this, and Senator Paul is trying to clear this up nationwide by introducing this legislation, which he has called the Justice for Breonna Act, to ban the use of no-knock warrants or situations where police are allowed to essentially break down the door without announcing their presence.
Well, I'm glad to hear that Senator Rand Paul is doing that. We agree with that. And we only have about a minute left. And for those of you just tuning in, we're speaking with Professor Rachel Paulos from the University of St. Thomas School of Law, former United States attorney from Minnesota. Professor, I'm curious to know your thoughts on what the Kentucky Attorney General Daniel Cameron said. It's something I mentioned at the beginning as my lead-in. He said, you know, justice is not popular and it does not, or justice is not easy and it often does not reflect something like the will of the people. I don't remember exactly mm-hmm. what he said, but should justice reflect changing cultures and changing times?
Well, the people have ultimate power here. The people have power over the judiciary through the grand jury and through the petit jury to decide issues at trial. The people have control over their executive branch in who they vote for president. They have control over the legislative branch, over who they vote for legislative positions. So the idea of the Constitution is that the power does belong to the people. I understand that the Attorney General is extremely concerned about the reaction of the people, and his comments in part were to speak to the frustration, the anger, the rage that is out there, and to encourage peace, which we all want. We all want calm. Mm-hmm. But I do think for those who are concerned about this, and many people will be, I hope those people are motivated to take their concerns to the ballot box, to protest, to march, and to engage in reform of their government.
Professor Rachel Paulos, University of St. Thomas School of Law and former U.S. Attorney for the state of Minnesota. Thank you so much for your time and your perspective today, Professor. We'll be in touch again, I'm pretty sure. Thank you.
Thank you both. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very enlightening. When we return, Susie Jones is going to be with us to chat about part two of her series on what is happening and going to happen to commercial real estate post-COVID. 536 Jordana and Paul, thank you for spending some time with us on this Wednesday afternoon. You're over the hump, friends. We are getting you over the hump. Our own Susie Jones in the newsroom has been working on a series about what is going to happen to commercial real estate during and post-COVID. Downtown has been a ghost town. So here now is installment two of her commercial real estate feature.
Remember the old days when downtown Minneapolis was filled with department stores like Donaldson's, Powers, JCPenney's, and of course, Dayton's? All of them gone now and not likely to return in their old form. Today, many of the windows are boarded up here after the social unrest that followed the killing of George Floyd and the recent chaos that was sparked by miscommunication involving a murder suspect. Much of the decline of retail, though, has been in play for some time. With the advent of malls, still in the middle of this time of uncertainty, there are some signs of hope in the retail world.
You can see here that these panels are designed to be completely collaborative, but if a threat level exists.
The new Dayton's project is back, and it has been designed to accommodate workers in this pandemic with movable partitions and a lot of open spaces. The 1.2 million square foot space has been in the works for 3 years. Brian Whiting is the CEO of Telos. That's the company that is in charge of leasing and marketing the project. He says they were well on their way to having it leased. Then COVID-19 hit.
We're in lease with about 100,000 square feet. We were in process with a couple 100,000 square feet of tenancy in January, and we had hoped that by March we would be announcing, but then when COVID came, the whole commercial real estate world went on hold. So that hold is still in place. There's maybe some life to it a little bit, but people are still talking to us. Most of the tenants we were ready to, we were in lease with, we're still talking to. We expect to be able to open that up for more discussions once we get what I call COVID clarity. And COVID clarity for us means when corporations are feeling comfortable to make decisions on when they're back to work and what their workspace is going to look like after the fact.
Some retail experts say larger retail companies are likely to survive, perhaps like Saks, Target's downtown, Nordstrom Rack, but the smaller retail operations may not.
The challenge that retail faces is different depending on who their basic customer is. So if you're selling sneakers, you know, business will snap back. But if you're selling men's clothing that's intended for the baby boomer crowd, it's a much tougher game.
George John is a marketing professor at the University of Minnesota. He says it's hard to say to what extent people will come back to shop.
The problem is we don't know what pieces of our behavioral changes are sticky and what pieces are transient. You know, we just revert back to it. So that's the big dilemma facing business.
Reporting from downtown Minneapolis, Susie Jones, News Talk 830 WCCO.
And Susie is joining us right now. Great story, Susie. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
I have my question is, and I'm not ready to bet against the downtowns long term anytime soon. I'm short term, obviously, there's pain. But when you talk to people, when you did all your interviews for this special series, is there anything to compare this with? Anything that was similar? We've had booms and busts, you know, for decades, especially commercial real estate. But has there ever been anything like this?
I think not like this pandemic, Paul. I think this is certainly completely new ground for so many of us. There's comparisons, but maybe not as drastic. I think about when you mentioned 2008, talking to Professor George John, and he mentioned that the advent of malls in the 70s was kind of the beginning of the fall of downtowns as we knew them, as the beginning of the story says. But then, of course, add in the recent years, even before COVID, online shopping. I mean, and you see like Target and others, how much their online shopping numbers have just exploded.
Right.
So that all is sort of, I mean, that's not bad. That's still money for retailers, but it's not the vibrant foot traffic that we saw downtown in the old days. I want to say one thing, though, Paul, because I was talking to somebody about this because everybody asked me questions about it. And the North Loop of downtown over Washington and you know where the North Loop is, right?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That, you know, there's so much housing back there. There's so much young, there are many young people that live there, and they have their grocery stores and their coffee shops and their restaurants. And they're out and about. I mean, they're walking their dogs. So in their little capsule, their little neck of the woods, they've kind of, it's a different story sort of in that pocket. So it's really the central part of downtown that we're talking about.
Hey, Susie, has anybody talked about reinventing their buildings? Instead of hoping business comes back and crossing their fingers, have they talked about making them, you know, housing for, you know, low-income housing or housing for homeless or turning them into maybe social, you know, social justice, sort of like social help spaces? Because, you know, we're seeing a big homeless population downtown, and we're seeing a lot of empty retail and commercial space. So is there any way to match those two?
You know, it's interesting because there are projects here and there where, at least on the outskirts of downtown, there are affordable housing units going up that I've done different stories on. I don't think I've heard anything specifically about that for downtown. But remember, too, you guys, maybe that, you know, that real central part of the city is suffering right now. But there's tremendous building going on. I mean, the Four Seasons is going up. Dayton's just had their that new project, $7 million infused. I mean, there's Thrivent just finished its headquarters. Deluxe Corporation is bringing its headquarters. So the I think, as Paul said, you know, we'll come through this. We're talking about kind of reinventing downtown. I don't know, Jor, that there'll be right in the heart of downtown housing for the homeless, but I do think it will become something different. And, you know, like Dayton's project manager saying, they're all set up in there for COVID, for tenants. You know, meaning if something comes up and there's a increased threat, they've got mechanisms in place to protect people.
I hear that. All right, Susie, we're out of time.
Okay.
We so appreciate this great story, and you got us thinking about how to use that space. We appreciate you. Thanks for the great reporting.
Thanks, Susie.
All right. Bye, guys.
You bet. Our big story today has been Breonna Taylor, and we have an update from Sloan Martin. There is a rally that is about to become underway in St. Paul. We'll check in with Sloan next.
Paul, you did say something that I thought was interesting.
I want to hit a kegger with you, Jordana.
Those were the highlights.
Well, you get kudos. Yeah, you get kudos when you say something interesting. I mean, it's rare, but, you know, I guess it happened today.
Kudos or cooties? Big difference.
Listen, our big story today is that there was no one charged for causing the death of Breonna Taylor, but a grand jury did indict a former Louisville police officer in the case. It was for unlawfully discharging a weapon into a neighbor's apartment, but there have been no charges for anyone causing her death. I am disappointed in this grand jury lack of indictment, and there are ralliers now at the state capitol who may feel the same way. Our own Sloan Martin is on site, and she's joining us on the CenterPoint Energy Home Service Plus hotline. Sloan, give us a taste of what's happening at the Capitol right now.
Well, Jordana, things are pretty quiet so far. I think it's also kind of people getting out to work, are getting done from work, having to come over here to the state capitol. And I learned long ago that these types of events rarely start on time. They are highly organized, though. I don't know the specific plan, if there is going to be a march. I did overhear someone say that they really have no interest in taking over the capitol, to use those terms, because I'm seeing right now there's chain link fencing surrounding the entire Capitol area, and not a huge police presence. I'm looking at maybe less than two dozen from two angles of the state capitol of state troopers, but they're staying back right now down up the stairs and toward the front entrance of the state capitol. But I'm just talking to people who say it's the same type of feeling where you feel hopeless. They feel also like it's history repeating itself again and again. And even if it was expected, they are just upset because Breonna Taylor, especially for Black women, has symbolized so much. A promising young woman, they say, with her career as an EMT, her aspirations to become a nurse and go to school. So this one in particular really hurts, even though we're several states away. She has become a national phenomenon, really, and her story has struck so many people. So you're seeing that same kind of anguish that we saw the last couple of months and much longer.
Have you spoken to anybody there and, you know, their reaction? I know some of our local folks from the NAACP, like Leslie Redman, had gone down to Louisville to protest the fact that nobody had been arrested. Certainly nobody had been charged. Have you spoken to anyone there who has any other insight?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much what the consensus is, Jordy. And I, like I said, I haven't spoken to any like official activists, just folks who wanted to turn out here again. And especially with the George Floyd killing coming right here in Minnesota, there still is this feeling of being kind of in the national conversation, being a leader in regards to addressing police reform and police brutality. So even though this happened in Louisville, there's still very much the same sentiments that we've seen throughout these months about really addressing the core problems with police. I mean, the Breonna Taylor case has really brought up, you know, if the defund police conversation was really thrown to the front after George Floyd was killed, now we're looking at other ways to really reform police. There's a lot of people who are talking about those no-knock warrants, for example. The New York Times, in their long investigative piece about Breonna Taylor, spoke to 12 neighbors. There was one who heard someone say that they were from police. And of course, her partner believed that there was an intruder at the time at around 1 a.m. So looking at other examples, whether it's, you know, an arrest being done in the street in South Minneapolis or a drug or narcotics investigation in Louisville, Kentucky, it's all connected together. And that's what I'm hearing from a lot of people here.
Okay, Sloan Martin, thank you. How long are you going to be on the scene? Play it by ear?
We'll see, as usual. I don't know what the plans are. I am seeing, like, medics, people who identify themselves as medical workers who can assist people. But I'm not seeing a major police presence here that would maybe, according to the protesters I've heard, you know, just kind of amplify things a little bit. So we'll see where things go as it starts to get later here. But so far, things very calm. And we've seen a lot of those kinds of peaceful protests. It just kind of depends on where things go.
Okay. Sloan Martin, thank you so much. Appreciate you. Be safe out there.
Twins pregame, 6 o'clock. Tigers at Twins coming up at 6:40. And then I'm not going to be joining you tomorrow. I've had enough of you guys. I'm out.
Is it something I said? It's probably something DJ said, right?
Probably. Yeah, he's so controversial, really. Yeah. No, actually, I'm filling in for Corey Heppala tomorrow. So I will be with you at 9 a.m. and you'll be on your own. But I think I'll join you for a game or two.
That would be awesome. I need a breath of fresh air. Thank you, Jor. Thank you, DJ. Thank you for hanging out with us, for loitering with us on the radio, and hope to see you back here same time, same channel, 3 to 6, News Talk 830 WCCO. Good luck, Jor. Don't swear.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.